From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1941 in Pep Comics. Vic Bloom and Bob Mantana created a redheaded character named Archie Andrews, and Archie spent years going back and forth between two attractive women, Betty the Blonde, Veronica the Brunette. But in recent years, the Archie comics have taken on more mature themes, and today, in one of the Archie comics lines, Archie will die. Specifically, he takes a bullet intended for his gay friend. That storyline has been building up, and it's got a lot of people talking. And it happens to be Pride Week in Rochester. It helps us kick off an hour of conversation about LGBT issues in Rochester and the celebrations that are coming up over the next few days. So joining us in studio, we have Scott Fearing, the executive director of the Genesee Valley Gay Alliance. Scott, nice to see you.
Great to be back.
We have Christopher Henley, the co-chair of Pride. Christopher, thanks for being here.
It's awesome to be here.
And we have Daria Nickel, who's here. She is an intern and a Pride volunteer coordinator. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having us.
Let's establish, Scott, no one who is in the studio besides me has any time to actually be here.
That's absolutely true. We actually walked out on our fellow committee members who are working on final details. We said, hey, Evan's show is top priority. We're going.
They're shocked to hear that. And I also want to welcome on the phone, just for a few minutes, to help us understand what's going on in the comic books of the world, which is the most important thing, as we all know. Mike Ringelberg is on the line with us. He's the owner of First Print Comics in Gates, Buffalo Road. Mike, thanks for taking the time.
Not a problem. Thank you.
All right. Well, let's start with this, Mike. I had read that the comic comes out today. Is that right, in which Archie dies?
Correct.
Okay. It's a storyline that's been building up, and what we're reading now is that he takes a bullet for his friend who is a newly elected senator who has been dealing with gun control issues. And what I had read was that his senator friend, his husband had been shot in a previous episode, a edition of the comic. Is that correct?
I believe so. I actually read the book last night, and they do reference that. His best friend is Kevin Keller, who they introduced a few years back, who is gay, and he married his physical therapist from the shooting, the original shooting. That guy was shot in the book, yes.
Okay, and so what's the buzz like in the comic book world for this storyline, Mike? What are you hearing?
I'm hearing interest. I'm hearing people that obviously we don't normally see in the shop come in and look for it. Whenever a major event like this or a major character like this is killed off, be it for whatever reason, that's kind of what it's for. It's to generate interest and hopefully you catch a few readers and you add people on.
Now, just as a way of understanding the mechanics and the structure of comic book worlds, this isn't a permanent death or a death of the main Archie. It's sort of hard to understand, but explain that there are how it works, Mike. There's several lines of comics, so this isn't the only Archie that's dying.
Correct. It is just this Archie. If you remember Lost from a few years ago, and there was all those multiple timelines on the show, they kind of relaunched this book called Life with Archie a few years ago, I think 5 or 6 years ago. And it was kind of an alternate timeline, a redo sort of to tell his story, this specific quote-unquote universe with that. And in the timeline, it got really muddled where they had two different timelines inside this book going on, where in one he married Betty and one he married Veronica, and then they melded the two somehow, and now we're at the end of this storyline, and they offed Archie in it.
Okay, and so that comic coming out today, one of the things we've been hearing from the creators of the comics through various interviews, Huffington Post and elsewhere, is that they view this as an opportunity to make a kind of political statement, not only on the issue of gay rights and same-sex marriage, but also on gun control. How often do we see that those kind of issues brought up in comics, Mike? I mean, is that somewhat normal to see the writers view this as a vehicle to get their views out?
Yes and no. I guess it depends on the publishers, et cetera. Gun control hasn't really been talked about. That's kind of new for this. There's a number of characters that are around in comic books that are gay that it's been handled well, and the stories make sense. When you read this book, the whole thing of Kevin being gay was really just it's referenced. It's shown that he's married to Corey. but it wasn't dwelled upon. It was really more, in this issue, it was more about the gun stuff.
And I would say good to that. I mean, you know, I'm glad to hear that. But I'm also curious to know if you have any customers or readers who might think that this is an all too convenient way to sell more books.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, of the collector's world, there's a lot of us that are skeptical that this is a ploy or a gimmick. I mean, it happens all the time. I mean, in this coming September, Marvel's going to kill Wolverine, and you know they're not going to leave him dead. I mean, and that's the main one. They killed Superman 20 years ago.
Yes.
So you know, I mean, it is a thing to gain interest and to hopefully spark you know, even if you get, you know, nationwide another 200 readers or 100 readers, then it does its thing. You know?
Yeah, let me read a quote from ComicsAlliance.com. They interviewed the creators of the book, who said the way in which Archie dies is everything you would expect of Archie. He dies heroically. He dies selflessly. He dies in the manner that epitomizes not only the best of Riverdale, but the best of all of us. It's what Archie has come to represent over the past almost 75 years. And the story goes on to say, when he steps into the path of a bullet meant for his friend Kevin Keller, it's the culmination of a storyline that has been building up as the writers examine America's, in their view, quote, lax gun laws. So you're getting a sense for the book now. Is the book in your shop now? When can people get it, Mike?
They can get it today. Unfortunately, I was shorted by my supplier, so I have a very, very, very limited supply. Hopefully later this week I'm going to get some more from them. But yeah, it's out today.
And let me wrap up with you on this note, Mike. What do you think the creators of Archie would say, you know, 70-some years later? It is a different world of comics and storylines, isn't it?
Very, very. I mean, back then it was, you know, he was kind of counter-programming at the time, because superheroes were really the big thing in the pulp heroes, and it was kind of, he was counter-programming. And now it's, you know, there's really something for everybody, let alone, you know, be it Archie or superheroes, sci-fi, everything. I mean, there's something for everybody. So it is a completely different world. It is, you know, every topic or story that you can think of has been touched on with comic books.
And to be clear, we never, Jughead is straight, right? I always thought it might be Jughead who was gay.
No. No.
No, that silly hat, that would never fly.
That's right. That would be a big faux pas, a fashion faux pas. Oh, Mike, see, you never know what we're going to throw you here. Mike Ringelberg is with First Print Comics, Buffalo Road in Gates. Mike, thanks for sharing your expertise from the comics world with us. I appreciate the time.
Not a problem. Thank you.
All right, that's Mike. So we got his take here. That's a great point, by the way. That weird crown that Jughead wore, Scott, The gay community would not be down with that.
Well, maybe in the Pride Parade or something like that. But generally speaking,
once a year.
Yeah.
Once a year.
I mean, you know, we're known as the fashion police sometimes.
Yeah.
It's a gene I didn't get, but many of my community do.
So let me kind of go around the room here and ask what you think of this storyline. It's got us talking, Scott. And what I was heartened to hear, because I haven't been obviously reading it book by book, I'm heartened to hear that that his friend Kevin Keller, who had become a regular character in the last 4 years, happens to be elected senator. They haven't made it some sort of a jaw-dropping, oh my gosh, he's gay. He happens to be gay.
Right. And that's sort of, you know, the big change that we've seen in society in the last, you know, 10 to 15 years especially, is that it's no longer a shock value. It's just part of who a character is, and sort of the mainstreaming of the issues and the reality that LGBT people are in everybody's life, that we are part of, you know, all occupations and all workplaces. And, you know, comic books in a way represent that. I was speaking with my younger brother last night, who's a graphic artist, about the storyline. And you know, he also brought up the fact that the big comic book convention, Comic-Con, is coming up here in a couple of weeks, and was wondering if potentially they timed it that way on purpose to help get some more buzz at the big conference.
Do you have any issue with writers, whether they're in the comics book world or literature or elsewhere, television, et cetera, even though they're writing fiction, they want to make a statement about, in this case, they want to talk about gun control, they want to talk about LGBT, whatever they want to talk about. Do you have an issue with them using their fictional characters as a vehicle?
Not at all. And I think that those are really important issues to look at. And, you know, if we look at anti-violence work within the LGBT community, we know that our community members are much more likely to be victims of crime. The trans community especially, the numbers are like 4 to 7 times mm-hmm. higher than it is for someone who's not trans-identified. So these are important issues for our community, and the reality of, you know, we don't have to look back to Harvey Milk, because the reality is our elected officials who do identify as LGBT are more likely to be assassinated.
Daria, when you heard about the Archie comic storyline, what did you think?
I found it very interesting, one, because I am not really into comic books. Like, maybe if my sister was here, she'd have more to say on that. But I found it interesting in the fact that the ally, I guess, was kind of coming to the rescue, whereby it's important to have allies in the movement and cause advocating for others' rights when they're not necessarily being heard. However, I do think that the LGBTQ community is very capable of advocating for their rights on their own. But I think that it's great to show that there can be a partnership and, like, just the overall fact that standing up for each other's humanity mm-hmm. is something that we all should be doing. So,
what do you think, Christopher?
Well, my dad was a cartoonist. He worked at Warner Brothers way back when. And the idea that you can take something that's happening in society and bring art to the rescue. I mean, basically, you know, we're engaging the art world by, you know, I consider comics art. And people that are able to do it and write the stories, and they reflect what's going on in the world and in the big world. So whether it's gays, gods, guns, whatever that would be, the fact that an artist can sit down, write the material, and then actually draw it. I wish I had that gene. I don't have it, but it's an amazing thing.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't even mind if a writer is expressing a view that I think is sort of wildly wrong. I like conversations and points of view, and sometimes fiction is a good vehicle for that. I'm not going to play it, but I had heard this morning that an online Fox program was looking at the Archie storyline, and their view was, this is an actual quote from the host, "Only in Obama's America would you have Archie dying for gun control and a gay friend?"
Sweet Jesus.
Wow. That's a powerful statement.
But, I mean, that's part of the natural conversation. That's free speech. I mean, that's
absolutely
the ability
right.
for us to, you know, all of us have a particular opinion and a point of view. I don't want to shut anybody else's opinion or point of view down. You know, sometimes it's somebody's gone out and bought their own network or whatever to espouse their own opinion. But that's the great thing about this country.
Yeah. And by the way, if you don't agree with, say, the SAFE Act or gun control laws, et cetera, or if you disagree with the political point of view of these writers, that's one thing. It's another to say, Archie dies, Obama.
It's
really it's pretty remarkable that
right.
to me Obama can be blamed for just about anything.
Right. And you know, the reality, again, looking at LGBT leaders who have been murdered over the years, they haven't all happened during the Obama administration.
Right.
And you know, the reality is, again, looking at Superman's death and others, it's part of the game of comic books.
Last word on Archie for me would be this. He was created in the 1940s, and obviously a different time. As Mike from First Print Comics told us, that it was kind of counter-programming to the superheroes and the outlandish stuff that was out there. He was
right.
more of the maybe literally and figuratively the white bread character,
yeah.
the very relatable storylines and the safe suburban character. And what I like is, he's still that safe suburban character, but, you know, we've sort of moved into an era where we don't blink that LGBT is not on the fringe. That is the mainstream normalized American life.
It's what's expected, you know, especially in younger folks today, is they know, I mean, that their entire lives they've had friends and neighbors and family members who are out. They've had characters on TV shows, characters in books, characters in their video games. So LGBT identity is nothing shocking anymore.
Yeah. By the way, for our listeners, with that comic, the picture of Archie on the cover is rather shocking, lying there in sort of a bloody pool with Betty and Veronica around him. The comic is out today. If you want to weigh in on that, you can join the conversation. And I see the phone starting to ring, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994, right here in Rochester. Anything else going on this week, guys?
Why? We Scott, why don't you tell them something?
It's Pride Week.
The magic of Rochester Pride. Nationally, Pride celebrations have been going on now for a number of weeks. Most of the big cities around the country do their massive Pride celebrations the end of June. It's an anniversary date for the Stonewall Riots, which was a riot in June of 1969 that kicked off the modern gay liberation movement. And so most large cities do their Pride celebrations on that anniversary date, again, June 28th, 29th. Smaller cities like us will usually end up having to find another date that works for us, and we've been the third weekend of July now for a number of years.
We're going to go down some of the events coming up, and there's a wide variety of events, family-friendly events, and all kinds of stuff coming up. But before we get there, let's grab our first call. This is Bernard. Thanks for calling the show, Bernard.
Yeah, I have a kind of a I don't know if it's a good question or a bad question, but I got to ask it. I was interviewing a guy once back in the 90s, and during the interview, the guy felt like it was important to tell me that he was gay. Hmm. And I was a little taken aback because I guess to some degree I wasn't interested, and I didn't know why he felt obligated to tell me. So is the long-term goal to be recognized as gay, or is that always going to be, I guess, like, for example, I'm going to call somebody my friend, and whether they're gay or not to me is kind of irrelevant. So how important is it that people acknowledge the fact that you're gay? Do you want to be recognized as being gay, or do you just want to be recognized as a friend? And I realize there's not one answer, but I'd be interested in that concept. Thanks very much.
Bernard, that's a really great question, and this is Scott, and I'll jump in first and then look to my colleagues if they want to add something to it. And I'll speak first from my own personal experience. Being gay is just a small portion of who I am. Now, I happen to work with a job where, you know, I'm a professional homosexual. That's my job.
And he does it well, folks.
So it's an unusual situation in that it's front and center in my conversations more than I actually would like it to be. But the reality is I want my life, my family, my identities to be part of who I am with all of my friends, with all of my interactions. I don't want to be treated. If I go to the doctor, I don't want the doctor to treat me like a straight man. And I want him to ask the questions that are specific to my identity and to my life and be ready to hear about my boyfriend or my husband or my partner, depending on the language that the client may be using. I want the doctor to know what health disparities may be there that they need to ask about. So I think sometimes it's really important. And then ultimately, for most people in the LGBT community, it's about being authentic and being honest. And, you know, we just naturally talk about relationships in our life, whether that be dating or marriages or partnerships, whatever it may be. And so for people to be able to just be honest in the conversation is important.
And let me ask the rest of the panel to respond to that question. I think it's – go ahead, Daria.
Yeah. I was going to say that I think when it comes to any sort of social situation whereby, like, you're not in the norm, it's important to acknowledge the person's background and be very aware that what they've gone through in life might be different from what you've gone through in life. And maybe in the caller saying that they were gay, they were just trying to let you know that their experiences have been different and they've gone through some obstacles in life because society hasn't deemed them the norm or the majority. And I think that's very important to understand in any sort of situation where the person is something other than what society would deem the norm.
Yeah, in other words, if you think someone that you meet is aggressively or even inappropriately talking about their sexuality, it might be worth understanding that their context and their life experience might be different than yours.
Yep.
So I think that's well said. What do you think, Christopher?
Well, I think what you just said is if somebody's being aggressive overtly, then that's more of sexual harassment, and we would treat that like we would anybody that's sexually harassing somebody. But, caller, the fact that that person chose to come out to you is because they want to be honest. because they have a certain level of integrity in them that says, I need you to understand who I am, because it will affect my job performance. If I can't be truthful at my job, then how can you trust me in other things? It's the smallest things to the biggest things. And having that integrity and understanding your identity. I mean, I was fired years ago. I do accounting for a living when I lived in New York City. And, you know, it wasn't said exactly why and all that stuff. But, you know, it was very clear because I was an out person. Sometimes I'd be in the media for different things, and it hurts. So,
did they talk to you about that before they fired you?
Actually, they had some innuendos during the conversation, and I just felt, you know, okay, well, this isn't working. Obviously, I want to work in an environment where people are going to, of course, love me and like what I do, you know, and accept me for who I am, but also where I can bring my skills and my God-given talents and make a difference. And I think that's the challenge, that when people say, well, I really don't need to know about your orientation. Well, yes, you do, in a respectful way. In other words, if you have a wife, if you have children, if you have a husband and you have children, whatever your relationships are, they will affect your work life. You know, that's why I love hearing when I hear that the moms who actually go out to work and have to take a few calls about their kids during the day, because that's reality. We have to celebrate that.
I don't know if I might have mentioned this story on this show before, but one of the really moving moments of my career was when I was a television news anchor and I was anchoring alongside, I think, the most talented person I've ever anchored along with, which is a man by the name of Edward Moody. And Edward is super, super talented, and unfortunately he has moved on to other markets. So Edward was a fabulous guy. His boyfriend cut my hair. I really miss them deeply. But I don't know the exact details of the past other than to say that he didn't talk a whole lot about his relationship on television, but you know how easy it is for a straight guy like me to mention my wife and no one blinks as a news anchor?
Correct.
Exactly.
You know, it's nothing, right? You know, I could say, oh, my wife and I are going to go down to Fairport Canal Fest or right. Whatever you're going to do, right. And no one blinks. But there isn't sort of a green light, red light. It's just more of a people will stop. And I guess I don't know what I'm saying, Scott, other than to say no. Edward didn't necessarily feel that it was the same level of comfort.
That's it completely. There's a phenomenon that I refer to in trainings about getting your ears bent out of shape. So when we hear information that we're not necessarily used to hearing, our ears hear it and it sort of perks up and we get sort of bent out of shape. So if I, as a man, say the words, my husband, that really resonates for people because they're not used to having a man say that. But if a woman were to say, they almost don't even hear it.
Yeah, it's like nothing. Yeah.
So the ears get bent out of shape when we hear new terminology. And I know as moving from Minnesota to New Jersey back in my 20s, I went from dealing with people who were all, you know, Norwegians and Lutherans and Catholics to around a lot of people who were Jewish and some Hasidic Jews. And for myself, that was new language. And I didn't understand these special holidays they were taking and prayer time and why they were standing in the corner praying. That just was so weird to me because it was a new experience. And sort of what Daria was just talking about is the cross-cultural aspect that comes with this and understanding that language does play a role in coming out and acknowledging your cultural background is important.
I was sitting next to Edward on the set when he essentially came out on the air.
Wow.
Where he was talking about Steve. Mm-hmm. And we went to break, and I almost cried because I felt stupid that it would move me that much because you hope to live in a world where that doesn't matter or doesn't impact. But it did. At that moment, it was new, and it was very difficult, I'm sure, at the time for him. He's also one of the more courageous people I know because he has stopped blinking, and he knows that there will be some percentage of the population, I think it's getting smaller and smaller, that will fire an arrow his way every time he does that. But he doesn't blink and he doesn't apologize for it. And just happens to be. So back to Bernard's question, I don't refer to Edward as like my gay friend or the gay news anchor. He's a news anchor, happens to be gay. He's also just like the most talented person I've ever met. Just happens to be gay.
And encouraging this conversation is, again, part of what Pride is all about. That's one of the goals of Pride, is to encourage conversation in a community to recognize that LGBT folks are here and are in the community.
And by the way, I don't know why this just struck me, but I saw a clip of of Pat Sajak of all things. Did you see the Wheel of Fortune?
No.
So he's I think this is recent. And Pat Sajak is introducing a guest, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself, and you know, so and so is in banking, and the guy says, I do so and so, and I'm engaged. And Pat says, oh, is the lucky lady here? And he says, lucky gentleman, in fact. And the guy just smiled, and Pat kind of just said, oh, I always get it wrong. And you know, he laughed.
He'd like to buy a vowel.
And the guy said, you know, that's all right. It's not the first time. And he smiled and moved on.
Yep.
But that's the expectation. When
right.
you hear a fiancé, the societal expectation. So anyway, I don't know what the value of all of that is, other than to say that
you're talking about that. You know, one of the things in our lives is relationships. And relationships of people, straight or gay, transgender, whatever that relationship is, and how they performed like a leadership service to us, and mentorship. I mean, what an awesome story about a mentor for you, or you know, a colleague that you worked with. That's what we hope to do for everyone we meet.
Yeah. Well, let's take a short break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to run down the events coming up. It's Pride Week in Rochester, and our guests are telling us all about that. Scott Fearing, the executive director of the Genesee Valley Gay Alliance, Christopher Hennelly, the co-chair of Pride, and Daria Nichol is here, an intern and a Pride volunteer coordinator. So talking about the events coming up over the next few days here in Rochester, we're stealing an hour of their time that they don't have to even give on member-supported public radio. Coming up in our second hour, Hairspray the Musical is coming to Rochester. It's time to coincide with the 50th anniversary of Rochester's race riots. Is America in 2014 a truly integrated society? The musical pokes fun at some of the stodgy stereotypes of America's past, but it's worth asking if we've left all of it behind or if racism remains under the surface. That conversation next hour on Connections. Oh, welcome back here. We're just jumping back to our conversation. I was telling a little bit of behind-the-scenes 13 Wham stories, and it's 13 Wham Day. My former colleague Norma Holland is here next hour.
Awesome.
So it's really, I mean, it's a great day for me here. I always like talking about our colleagues and friends over there, but I was telling some stories a little out of school off the radio, so I should keep some of those stories off the radio. Suffice to say, whether it's Edward Moody or Kyle Clark, who's in Denver, et cetera, there have been some very, very talented people who have come through there. So let's talk about what's coming up this weekend, and I'll start with Scott. It's Pride Week, but give me a sense for what's coming up.
Well, there is a full week of activities. We at the Gay Alliance are responsible for sort of the four big capstone events, basically Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but there are lots of other organizations doing events all week long, from the JCC to Image Out, the film festival. NYSET is hosting a reception for LGBT educators here in town. NOTA, the Neighborhood of the Arts, is doing a special celebration honoring Pride and its role in the neighborhood. So there's lots of other activities going on. The big capstone events, I'm going to start with the one that kind of goes all weekend long, and that's the Rock Pride Games. It's a relatively new activity for us. Last year was the first year, so this is the second. We have a number of different tournaments that take place throughout the weekend. I actually just spoke with the people over at the Monroe County Sports Commission who are helping us plan this, and we're going to be going even bigger next year. We already began planning on it. This year we've got a women's rugby tournament going on. We've got some roller derby going on. We're participating in volleyball and obstacle runs. So there's all sorts of LGBT presence in sports tournaments all weekend long, and that's our effort to try to bring some health and wellness issues into the Pride celebrations for the weekend. Do you want me to keep rolling?
Yeah. No. this is a good snapshot of the calendar, and then we'll talk about some of the
There isn't tiddlywinks. We're not doing that.
That didn't make it into the Pride Games this year. On Friday, we start really kick off the big events on Friday evening with the rainbow flag raising at Martin Luther King Square Park. It's tough to
at
make
Manhattan
that name
Square.
Change. At Manhattan Square.
Is that the full official name?
That is.
I should even know.
Try
that.
To do that
Tell
on
me
radio
again, Christopher,
over
what is
and
it?
Over again.
It's
Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Square Park at Manhattan Square.
Okay. There we go. So Friday evening at 6 o'clock, we kick off there with the giant rainbow flag on exhibit, as well as the LGBTQ community history exhibit that we have, that are 24 panels talking about the history of the LGBT community here in Rochester. We also have that evening the Latino and Latina LGBTQ Voices Theater Project will be doing some presentations that evening in the park. Also that night is the LGBT Pride Youth Dance that's happening at one of the clubs here in town. closing off the area, and so the youth will be there having a pride dance. Then things get going on Saturday morning at noon. We open up the park again back at MLK Park. From noon to 3, it's free to enter the park. We have family fun time, which includes free bands. We have face painting games for the kids. We have a mask decorating contest, things like that. The vendors are there. The food carts are there. Things get going at noon. At 3:30, we sort of begin to twist the park over, and it becomes the evening festival site and dance site. So we start charging admission at 3:30, the bar opens and the dancing starts. The across town on Park Avenue at 3 o'clock, the Pride Parade steps off, probably the most visible part of the weekend. So the Pride Parade heads from Park Avenue beginning at Berkeley all the way down to where Park runs into Alexander, then up to East, and then on East Avenue across the Inner Loop and down into the park. The parade route is always lined with lots of people celebrating and otherwise. The businesses along Park Avenue love it because it brings lots of folks in to have early dinner, late lunch, and imbibe a little bit along the parade route and wave their rainbow flags. So that's Saturday. The festival goes until 9 o'clock at night, and our headliner goes on at 7:30.
Yep.
And our headliner this year is an Australian musician named Betty Who. Not Who's Betty, but Betty Who. And she actually was Monday night the guest on the Seth Meyers show. And so she's coming into town here and will be performing 7:30 on Saturday evening at the festival grounds. On Sunday, a bit more laid back, we have the picnic in the park down at Genesee Valley Park. The picnic starts at 1 o'clock p.m. and goes until 7 p.m. All of these events are open to anyone to join us, no matter what your identity, and we gladly welcome folks to join us and celebrate along with us.
Let me ask a very ignorant question. How many years have you've been doing Pride in Rochester?
I feel old. No, I personally have been working on Pride for 2 years, but the Gay Alliance has had the picnic for over 41 years.
For over 41 years.
41 years. The parade, this is the 25th anniversary, yep. And the festival is right around 20-something.
All right, so the ignorant question is, are you seeing more straight people hanging out, participating, coming down?
I'd roughly say around 30-some-odd percent. From people that self-identify, you know, when we talk to people.
Yeah.
In the festival, yeah. At least, absolutely. Yeah. And then the parade route, I'm going to say the parade route is
huge.
Much higher than that. The largest contingency within the parade, and we've got 81 units marching this year. The largest single contingency are local churches and welcoming congregations, as well as politicians, of course. But those are the two biggest constituency groups marching in the parade. We also have the unions joining us, the VA. We were the first Pride Parade in the country to have the VA Color Guard actually lead our Pride Parade.
Now, on Twitter, Mike is asking what the purpose of all of these events is. And for me, reminds me of a couple of things. So I had read a piece by a guy by the name of John McKellar attacking the notion of Pride events, saying that, and I think John is gay, I think he's Canadian, who says, my radical brothers and sisters make sexual orientation not a lifestyle but a religion. It's their whole identity. It's absurd and sad. And he says it's militant. But do we not have an Irish festival? Do we not have
Puerto Rican festival? Exactly. I've been there many times.
I'm curious about, like, I mean, is this just part of identity, right?
It absolutely is.
I don't know why it's militant.
The interesting thing, and I'm going to ask Dari to talk about sort of the official reasons behind us having a Pride Festival in a moment, but for me, that weekend, that's where I focus on that piece of my identity. Again, much like the Irish Fest or the Greek Fest or others would do, is I can kind of let the rest of my life go and I can focus on celebrating that aspect of who I am and my relationship and my connection to community and others. But the Pride celebration itself actually has four really strong foundations that actually is why we host Pride. And I'll have Daria give the sort of business reasons for Pride.
Yeah. So basically what I want to say first is that I identify as a straight female, right? And I'm all about Pride. I think that it's a great event. And I have a ton of friends who also identify as straight who are participating in the event as volunteers. I'm coordinating volunteers. So
she
I'll just
does
put
a great job
for
at that,
that,
by the way.
But officially, the goals of Rochester Pride are really to educate about diversity issues and goals of the LGBTQ and allied communities, to provide a forum for Rochester to really celebrate the history and accomplishments of the community and how far we've come, to provide an opportunity for networking between the businesses and organizations and various services that are LGBTQ friendly, And then also to celebrate the overall health, dignity, respect, freedom, and all that comes with the honesty and authenticity of living and loving. So,
well said. And Gary online is asking what the Q is. LGBT, okay, so. We hear LGBT, but we also hear LGBTQ.
Right.
And I heard you just mention it. I saw Gary's question. What's the answer?
So I've had the I've been fortunate enough to be paired as an intern with the Gay Alliance this summer through the University of Rochester. So I've been learning a lot about the terminology and whatnot also. Q can stand for queer or questioning, but I think most recently, correct me if I'm wrong, it's been queer, and it's to sort of go back to the youth embracing the term, because historically it has been viewed as derogatory, yeah. But there's been a movement around people that are like my age and younger, or around my generation, I'm 20, to put that in perspective, to really embrace the word and... Do you want to take?
Yeah, well, I think the only other important thing, and I think we've talked about this on the show before, is that it really is academia that took the term back and created queer study programs, and so that's where I've seen it come back into vogue, as it were.
And that's interesting, because academia is only going to do that if they feel it's the proper term. How did you feel about that, Scott?
I'm sort of an oddball for my generation as a 50-something year old. I've always embraced the term. It was a term that when I came out at 20 years old, I thought was an okay term. But most folks of my generation and older, and some even a little younger than me, find it a really difficult term, and it makes sense. What we know is that about 83% of hate crimes that are committed against the LGBT community, the number one term that is used during the crime is the term queer. So a lot of people have reasons to not like the term.
Yeah. Let's get back to the phones. This is John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. You know, Archie's dead. I can't believe it. And violently, too. I had heard about it, and I'm listening to the show, and you guys kind of confirmed it. I haven't read Archie comics in a long, long time, since I was a kid, really. But I'm kind of shocked that it's the writing of the comic strip has gone that way. The reason I called was you're talking about the point of gun violence, and maybe that's what they wanted to show here, that gun violence obviously is bad, but I look at it a little bit differently. I think I take the position really people murder, not the guns. The guns are an object that's not living, and it's the people that do it. And one of the big bugaboos I have about the gun argument is that the tremendous amount of violence that we see in the media, whether it's HBO or like right now the comic strip Archie, I just think this violence is to a level which has to be abated, and I don't know how we do that. We can't censor legally, and we wouldn't want to censor, but I think people can take a stance, maybe boycott some of the entertainment industry for these violent episodes, because there's a certain percentage of people, I think, in this country, let's say 1%. I always liken it to Ralph Wilson Stadium. When a Buffalo Bills game, you got 72,000 people there. If you have 1% of the people that are out of their minds, that's 720 people in one spot. So I think I would like to see people speaking out, not against the guns, but against the violence and how it affects people that are unstable, these mass... these killers that are doing the mass shooting, yeah, are out of their minds, and I think they've been affected by the constant violence that you see on HBO as an example.
Yeah, no, John, I think it's the hardest part about this question is that there's too many variables to ever get a good study on whether violence in the media and in Hollywood begets more violence. I suspect it desensitizes a certain amount of the population. I don't know how much, but I agree with you, John. It doesn't have to be much to be concerning. So I think that's a and by the way, to John's point, that's really a subject for another day on the show, and maybe a better prepared host will come back and I will be able to wade through more studies on the issue.
I think I can build a link here, and I appreciate John's comments. And like you, John, I haven't followed Archie in years, and I'm actually going to go buy a comic book. So I'm going to have to go visit
Mike. They've got you.
They got me to come in the store, or I haven't been in years. But for me, this all wraps back around to the anti-bullying work that we did so much of a couple years ago and continue to do through the Gay Alliance. Is we do need to have conversations as a society about what it does mean to be civil. We need to look at teaching peace. We need to look at how easily things can escalate from calling someone a name to these days people picking up bats or guns or whatever it may be. So I think it's a good teaching moment. Thanks, John.
And by the way, to circle back to an earlier question that Bernard has, I'm seeing that the mainstream media, and I'm probably part of this problem, is are putting headlines out there regarding Archie that are poorly worded. Because in this case, Archie is taking a bullet for a friend who is fighting for gun control reform.
Right.
A friend who happens to be gay. And yes, it's a more complex storyline than that. But apparently in the storyline, and I haven't read the book, the bullet is more intended because the assailant doesn't like his stance on guns, right? So the headline is not Archie takes a bullet for his gay friend. The headline is Archie takes a bullet for his senator friend who's fighting for gun control.
Yeah.
So I think the media is missing that one.
Well, and there's also the whole issue that he's doing something very noble.
Yeah.
And it's getting spun off onto this other political statement instead of talking about, wow, the power of somebody caring that much about their friend.
Yeah. So anyway, so I think we've hit lots of different tangents. I also want to ask another ignorant question, but I'm always curious when Pride Week comes along. You know, we all have gay friends who have had different experiences on coming out.
Yep.
Do people come to Pride Week, and have you seen people inspired to come out to sort of embrace it? Does that happen on a yearly basis?
I will tell you my story where I used to demonstrate against the gay pride parade and stand outside St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City. And one of the parade marchers looked over at me and said, "Son, I'm praying for you too." And I was, 19 years old. And it was a journey and it was a process. I wasn't yelling anything at anybody. But so I look at anybody that might be against it. I'm like, oh, make sure you're always civil and loving because you never know. And the guy that did that for me showed me compassion and kind of said, wait a minute, who are we talking to here? So you never know. That's the beauty of the world. You can have an impact in somebody's life.
And I do know that there's been a lot of people who have coming to a festival or a parade or a pride event of some sort as a stepping stone in their journey of coming out, because they can come and observe the community and get to a sense of who they might be. Again, it's about finding community, and that's ultimately what it comes down to. And I'll also acknowledge that we do have our protesters along our parade route. There's usually a block or two where we'll have a group of people with their very, very abusive signs, and actually oftentimes quite graphic and nasty. We work very closely with our community to just basically ignore them, be polite to them, be kind with them, don't necessarily engage on the issues because that's not the time or place for that. And, maybe give a response like the one Christopher just mentioned back to them.
That's a case where sometimes you don't want to feed the trolls.
But you never know. I mean, look what happened years later. I dedicated my life to doing AIDS activism as an activist. So
maybe feed them with a hug.
Yeah.
There you go.
Give them a hug.
Yes.
Say, I love you too.
Yeah.
Because for many of those protesters, for them, it is truly coming from a place of goodwill, despite how I might see it at the moment. And so to just acknowledge their own humanity, and yes, they may be saying really horrible, nasty things to me, but I don't have to feel the same about them.
And when it comes to coming out, I remember reading what Andrew Sullivan wrote about Jodie Foster. When Jodie Foster came out, it was sort of a clunky coming out at the Golden Globes, 2013, 2012, something like that.
Yeah.
And was the strange part about it was she didn't really overtly come out, but it was sort of a kind of a public coming out, and she kind of did it in a way that said she was able to have her career and live in the closet, essentially, and now she can talk about it. And Andrew Sullivan wrote, "What unadulterated BS. She never came out until very obliquely in 2007, and virtually every coming out these days is low-key, simple, and no drama, unlike hers. I do not remember Anderson Cooper's press conference or reality show when gay people were put in jail or mental institutions or thrown out of their families, all because of the, quote, beauty of privacy for Hollywood royalty like Foster, and she honestly believes it's courageous to come out in a retirement speech. Well, I guess we should be relieved she didn't leave it for her obit." Those are strong words, and there's always a debate about, do people in power have a responsibility to come out? And I don't know if any of us can really decide what people's responsibility is, but if you are in a position of influence, power, public eye, Scott, is there more of a almost a responsibility to own it, to acknowledge it publicly?
I do believe that if you are in a position of power or authority, as long as you are not actively working against your community, you can stay in your closet if you're more comfortable with it. I worked very closely with a company back in Minnesota where there was a very senior vice president who kept for years rejecting any efforts within their company to add domestic partner benefits or LGBT awareness into their policies. And he was a gay man, and he actively worked against his own community. And finally, some of the employees went to him, literally went to his house and said, "You can be in the closet, that's okay, but don't stand in our way of trying to be treated respectfully in the workplace." So if you're in a position of authority, I think your obligation is not to be an obstacle.
Yeah.
But
I'm trying to remember the Bush. It was a Ken Melman. The Bush.
Yeah.
Ken Melman was the Bush aide who,
yep,
you know, in the Bush years worked pretty extensively on anti-gay issues, and it has since come out. And I think it has acknowledged his own struggle with it. But that's an example.
And we've seen that happen in a number of different different arenas, both political and religious, where oftentimes people who are very anti-gay.
Yeah.
We also see individuals who have gay children become very anti-gay. And, you know, the Newt Gingrich situation with his sister, and there are others that to this day, both local and national and statewide, that have gay relatives and are very anti-gay in the work that they do.
Christopher, is there an obligation for someone in a position of power to be more out and open?
I think that yes.
The straight answer is yes,
that you have a moral obligation to not leave your brothers and sisters behind. And, you know, I've lived in a world where it wasn't safe to be out, where in a world that, you know, a lot has changed, but still the issues are still a struggle for a lot of people. And I think if you do have a position of leadership, you have a moral imperative to try to come out as best as you can.
We talked yesterday on this program with the folks from the Center for Inquiry. We interviewed Dan Courtney, who gave the invocation in Greece last night, the first atheist to do so. And we talked about the fact that Barney Frank has said it was harder for him to come out as an atheist than it was as a gay man in public office. But are you seeing more people in politics comfortable with their sexuality, and do you think that barrier is coming down, Scott?
Oh, absolutely. And we see more and more political leaders all over who are acknowledging, you know, their own identity, possibly as LGBT, as well as family members. It's part of that bigger social change that we've witnessed in the last number of years where, you know, if Archie can talk about gay people and have gay friends, why can't I?
Yeah.
So it's just part of the conversation.
And the assumption that gay means Democrat is wrong. We know that. It's more interesting when we find out, okay, that a Republican or somebody is more conservative. You could have conservative values and still be gay and still be out.
Hello, Andrew Sullivan.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and that is part of the community. My Republican friends, my conservative friends, my Democrat, my lefty liberal friends, I need them all in my life.
I think that's well said. So let's start to wrap the hour by let's kind of go back over the events. I'll let anybody who wants to jump in and tell us where can we grab if people want to grab a calendar of events coming up and check it out.
You can go to rochesterpride.com. And one of the things I just want to let people know quickly, during the Family Free Fun event, we have the Mambo Kings will be performing and the Barrican Dance Theater. During the evening festival, we have the Gay Men's Chorus, the Rochester Community Chorus, Women's Chorus, DJ De Leon, Samantha Vega, Dee Dee Dubois. We got a long list of people. So if you go to rochesterpride.com, everything you need to know about Pride and get tickets is there.
I also wanted to say a quick thank you to all of the volunteers that we have so far. We have over 300 plus volunteers.
She said so far, by the way.
Yeah, so far. Awesome. We still need a few more.
We're about 20 short.
Yeah, about 20 short. But we have about 300 plus volunteers so far helping us out. And without you guys, none of this would be possible at all. And this is such a great event. So I encourage all of you guys to come out. And I give a big thank you to the Gay Alliance for helping me with this opportunity and giving me the opportunity to coordinate all of you volunteers. So.
Daria, I've got less than a minute, but as you mentioned, you're a 20-year-old straight woman.
Yep.
How did you get involved? It's very interesting and great to see you.
So I've always been interested in issues of social rights and social change, but most notably through the University of Rochester, there's the Susan B. Anthony Institute for Gender and Women's Studies, and they have this program called ROXY, which is a program on feminist leadership, and I guess just learning more about this. So we all got, there's 8 interns, and we all got paired up with an organization, and I was lucky enough to be paired up with the Gay Alliance, so...
Very interesting story. Yep. And I know you're happy to have her, Scott.
Absolutely. One of our best interns ever. She's been fabulous to have in the office.
Thank you.
All right, Scott. We can only go to one event coming up for Pride. What's it going to be?
Wow. Probably the festival. If you're into music and good times, that would be the place to be. If you want something more relaxing, then come on down to the park on Sunday. Or if nothing else, stand along the parade route and wave your rainbow flag and have a good time watching the floats.
I am not kidding. If you call or email Scott Fearing right now, you get a message that says, you may not hear from me until next week because it's Pride Week and I'm buried. And he not only called me back, but he took an hour out for us today, an hour plus. So, Scott, Christopher, Daria, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Great stuff. Have a great few days. You've got great weather coming up. And thanks for sharing what's coming up for Pride coming up.
Terrific. Thank you, Evan.
Thank you, Evan.
Short break, and the Holland Sisters are in studio next. There's no way you should miss that on Member Supported Public Radio.